This is the Adam Gold Show.
Who's this? Can I get this name wrong, too?
Possibly.
Who is this?
Chatham County Line.
Chatham County Line. They'll also be on one of the stages.
Tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. That music station with their little music festival. So refreshments and live music. Can't beat that combination. It's also hard to beat the combination that the Colorado Avalanche are putting on the ice with McKinnon and Rantanen and Landeskog and Kadri and Makar and getting good enough goaltending, actually very good goaltending with Darcy Kuemper. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer taking some time out from a vacation to chat with us. We're going to start with the Stanley Cup Finals. We're also going to talk about the NBA draft. Is it over tonight, do you think?
No, I'm not prepared to count the Lightning out until the Lightning are officially done. And I think in their minds, it's probably 2-2 based on the way Game 4 ended. And that can be pretty strong motivation. But I don't think it's over. I did think, going back before the start of the finals, that you know the Lightning were going to win the East and that Colorado, if Colorado came out of the West, would beat the Lightning. Just because they were just a better team. So yeah. I'm not necessarily surprised at the way this has gone. I thought the Lightning would beat the Rangers. I thought the Avalanche would beat the Oilers. And I thought the Avalanche would beat the Lightning. But I do think, as was true in the Eastern Conference, until you actually beat the Lightning, you haven't beaten the Lightning. And so I think this probably still ends up going, if not 6-7 games, the Lightning will be very hard to kill.
You are more optimistic about this than I am. I actually picked the Lightning to win this series because I thought that Tampa would come home and win twice, and then that that mystique would sort of take over and they would steal a game five and close it out because there's still no team in the NHL that locks it down better than Tampa Bay. But I just don't think that, you know, they did look better than Colorado in game three, but even in game four, I just thought Colorado looked like the better team in front of the goaltender. So Kuemper played well. Kuemper held him in the first period, and then Colorado just looked like the better team for the rest of the, 48, 49, 50 minutes of the game. I just think Colorado looks better.
Yeah, no, I think Colorado's a better team. But as I said, when you're dealing with a team like the Lightning with the championship pedigree that it has, the goaltender that it has, mm-hmm. I just don't think until the head is off that snake, you can't call it dead.
Does tonight have to be an Andrei Vasilevskiy show?
I mean, I think it does almost in the sense that the way he plays on the other side of elimination games has been such a constant for Tampa. I think they're going to – this is one of those games where you do sort of have to turn around and rely on your guy to steal one. And then you've got a chance coming home for Game 6 to extend the series and then throw it into a – you know, into the hat in Game 7. So, yeah, no, I think if one of these next two games is going to be a Vasilevskiy game. Obviously, it has to be this one. But I think you can get away with it at home. I think on the road, this is a situation where you need your goalie to win you one and probably your power play. And if they can do that, then they've got a chance to extend the series.
Colorado's power play is only operating at about 50% in the finals.
I mean, really, it's just a game of margins between them and the Hurricanes in the postseason. They're very, very, very close in the abstract. It's all perspective, Adam.
They flashed it up during the middle of game four, 6-for-12 on the power play, and Andrei Vasilevsky's in goal, and he's helpless. And some of these, like there's been a carom, there's one goes in off of a leg, but it doesn't matter. I mean, Tampa can't clear the zone, and Colorado just, I mean, has tons of talent. It's just like having Martin Natchez. On the power play.
So similar.
You can close your eyes and see the same thing. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer is joining us. All right, so Duke had four first-round picks. Second time they've had four first-round NBA draft picks. They had five picks overall. Trevor Keels goes 12th in the second round. 12th in the second round to the Knicks. Ballpark, big picture, what we saw last night from a Duke perspective.
Well, one, I think the number one thing that stood out to me above and beyond everything else is when I watched college basketball this year and I saw Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith and Paolo Banchero play a lot on television, obviously saw all three of them play in person during the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. and saw Banchero play in person a lot. But I thought of that group, I thought Bankero was the one who looked like a potential NBA star. I mean, Smith is a tremendous athlete. I think he'll be a good NBA player. I have a lot of doubts about Chet Holmgren. I really, just seeing him in person compared to on TV, he's so much more frail. I just have serious doubts about his ability to hold up in the NBA unless he puts on a ton of weight. And if I'm a team with the first pick, I want to take the guy who I know can handle the banging, who I know can handle the pressure, and who I know can shoot. I think that's the thing about Bankero is we saw him early in the season and then again in the postseason. When he got that will into his game, to me, he was playing an NBA-style game. Yeah. You had to decide whether to guard the dribble or guard the shot. And to me, that's in the NBA, that's what you're looking for. So if I were a GM, I would not have objected to someone taking Smith because I think he's a terrific player and he's got an NBA body and he's an NBA athlete and he'll find ways to score and contribute. I think that's fine. But if you're asking me of the three, which one do I think has the chance to be an NBA star, the kind of guy that's worth taking with the number one pick, I absolutely would have said Bankero. And maybe there's some exposure bias there, but there was no doubt in my mind that of those three guys, that's who I would want for my team, especially if I were in a position where I was picking first. You know, as for the other guys, you know, I think Mark Williams landing in Charlotte's a great fit. That's exactly the kind of player Charlotte needed last year, quite frankly. And I know centers and those type of big men don't matter that much in the playoffs, but I think they do matter getting you there. And I think over the course of the season, you know, you need a guy you can bring in, whether he's a starter or off the bench, who can guard the rim and who can score on putbacks and things like that. And I think Mark Williams can do both of those things. Very mobile and an incredibly smart kid who's really going to get sort of the intricacies of the NBA game immediately. I think he's going to have a very short runway to being a contributor in the league. And he's, you know, he's a good enough athlete, I think, at that level. And then, you know, I was actually kind of surprised AJ Griffin fell as far as he did just because of his ability to shoot.
Yeah, knees.
Well, the question mark there is, the biggest questions about him from an NBA perspective are his defense and his ability to move the ball on the dribble and create his own shot to a certain extent. And we just don't know how much of that is the knees and will that get better with time, as because he's still very shortly removed from some of these knees.
He's also incredibly young,
which is, if you're drafting a 22-year-old with AJ Griffin's knees, it might give you pause. At his age, I think he still has time to recover and rehab and get better as he puts some distance between himself and would have been some pretty significant knee injuries. That said, I think for a team that's drafting in the top 10, top 12, if you're going to gamble on a kid, why not gamble on a kid you know can shoot?
Right.
And if he gets healthier, is a good enough athlete where he should be able to create his own shot and he should be able to guard at the NBA level. And he's got NBA size and he's got NBA pedigree. So I even with the questions about his knees, to me that was a potential excuse for some of his shortcomings on the court, and that would sort of resolve itself. So none of that necessarily surprised me. I actually thought the players kind of, Williams and Bankero in particular, sort of landed where they were supposed to land. And obviously the other guys, slightly different stories. But, I thought Bankero going number one, especially after all the talk that, you know, Holmgren was a lock to go one and all of that, was interesting. But I also thought it suggested an NBA team that actually did its homework.
Yeah, and what I liked about Orlando, and real quick about Chet Holmgren, I mean, he's see-through. I mean, he's that skinny, and I don't know how much weight he's going to put on. He's incredibly skilled, and as long as he can put on enough weight to not break in half when somebody, you know, puts a 265-pound body on him, then he's going to be a good player because he is that skilled. But I love the fact that Orlando never worked Paolo Bankero out. They didn't. They brought Jabari Smith in. They brought Chet Holmgren in. And what it says was that we saw enough of Paolo Bankero on tape. We watched enough of his games to know what kind of player he is. So we're bringing these guys in to see them up close and see what they're about. But they had probably in their mind that they were already going to take Bankero. What do you think about Darian Sebron as an NBA player? He goes to New Orleans, not undrafted, but I think a two-way contract is in his future with the Pelicans. If he has a shot, if he can develop and hone a jump shot, he's a pro to me.
Yeah, he's got everything else. Unfortunately, it's a shooter's league. And that's why I think it would have been, you know, probably better for him in the abstract to come back to NC State. But, you know, other guys, sometimes guys are just done with college. You know, Sebron had the redshirt for a year. He's older. Sometimes you just want to get on with it. It was the same thing with Trevor Lacy. Although I think in Trevor Lacy's case, this is an example I use all the time. If NIL had existed, Trevor Lacy would have cleaned up coming. He would have made more playing another his final year at NC State than he would have in the Cypress League or wherever he ended up. So it does cut both ways. But I get why Sebron turned pro. I also get why he wasn't drafted, and I think it's probably pretty savvy of the Pelicans to bring him in on a two-way contract, spend some time in the G League. He's got the body. He's got the ability to get to the rim. He can rebound. He can defend. He's just got to find a way to make people honor him as a threat offensively. I think he's still going to play in the league because I think he's too good of a basketball player not to. But I don't know what his upside future is. I don't know kind of where the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is going to be for him if he can't make NBA threes. If he can't make jump shots, but NBA threes particularly, because you just have to do that in today's game. There just isn't room for a guy who can't.
You and I did not, we're talking with Luke Dukakis of the News and Observer, you and I did not talk about LIV last week, but what do you make of the DP World Tour allowing the LIV players to play this week in Germany, next week in Ireland, but not the following week in Scotland?
It's interesting. I mean, I think they're trying to give players who are thinking about jumping, you know, a little more window to do it, because it has been this slow trickle, one player after another. You know, it hasn't typically been big groups. I think a little of that's calculated.
Yes.
You know, I the more I think about this, the more I come back to one essential point that you and I have talked about either off the air or maybe on the podcast or whatever. It's not particularly novel, but the guys who were going to skip Hartford or Fort Worth or Hilton Head to play in a $2 million exhibition in Taipei or Qatar or wherever, they weren't going to be playing in some of these tournaments anyway. So for them, jumping to play in an exhibition tour is fine. And the guys whose bodies are breaking down, like Koepka and DeChambeau, you know, that's and probably DJ too. That's fine. I mean, DJ's, I think it's probably more DJ's mind in terms of his level of interest in playing four rounds of golf a week. But, you know, that's fine. Let them go. In the end, because you're playing exhibitions, and because you're going to find yourself qualifying for the majors, I really think the tipping point in the LIV Tour is not going to be now. It's going to be next May when these guys are standing on the first tee in Rockville, Maryland, realizing they got to play 36 holes on a 102-degree day and 95% humidity just to get to the Open, that their exemptions are gone and that all of that. And I there's no doubt in my mind the Masters is going to lock the doors on these guys too. The British will find its own ways. The PGA will. I mean, the entry paths without world golf rankings points into these majors are few, and they are hard. But in the end, to me, because it's exhibitions, because it's a 54-hole shotgun like a member guest, what you end up with is, the Harlem Globetrotters are great. A lot of people like to watch the Harlem Globetrotters on TV. They sell a lot of tickets. Are the Harlem Globetrotters a threat to the NBA? They are not. And to me, that's where this is going to land still. I think, as you and I have talked about previously, this is going to provoke some healthy, much-needed, long-overdue changes in the structure and format and power distribution on the PGA Tour. It's been a little too doctrinaire. It's been a little too controlled by the board, top-down. I think all that's going to change because the players who are staying are going to want more of a voice in things. But I don't really see the LIV Tour as an existential threat the way some people do.
I do, because there's so much money involved, and it really depends on what happens over the next couple of weeks with who else goes. If there are five more players out of the world top 30 that go, it becomes a serious problem unless the PGA Tour backs off of their, because who knows how long this ban lasts. And the type of player that goes as well. But you're right about the world golf rankings and the majors. That's the tipping point. The Masters may not have to do anything other than, they're going to have a bunch of guys who won the Masters who are going to – they're going to have to let back in, the Patrick Reeds, the Sergio Garcias. I don't think they'll ban those guys from coming back, Dustin Johnson as well. But they might make qualification a lot more difficult, but it does all come down to the world rankings. But I think this tour is around to stay because they're offering stupid money. And this is not about, it's not even competitive. I'm not talking about the golf. I'm talking about the two situations because there's too much money and they can simply double what they've offered. The public investment fund is worth $620 billion. The PGA Tour spreads out $427 million this year. That money, that number can't go up that much. It just can't. And they're trying to, but they can't compete financially. They have to tug on the history of the sport, and it all depends on whether some of these guys give a damn about the history of the sport.
I mean, I think the difference in a professional golfer and a good amateur golfer, or a professional golfer and a guy who makes a lot of money in Vegas and money games, is often the competitive spirit. And I don't think a lot of these guys are going to find themselves fueled by the difference between the amount of money compared to playing for something that's real and playing for something that's not real.
Right.
I think that's what Rory expressed. Mm-hmm. That's what John Rahm expressed. I think if you're the kind of person who gets in the top 30 in the world golf rankings or in the PGA Tour money list, you have a competitive drive that distinguishes you from the people who are 60 to 120. And that's the kind of thing that's going to keep you playing in real tournaments against other top players. I don't think there's, other than maybe Dustin, I don't think there's a player who's jumped who anyone says is among the best in the game. I mean, Brooks was not too long ago, but his body's completely failing him. And it's not like the money on the PGA Tour isn't good enough. It's just, to me, the guys who are jumping to the LIV Tour are the kind of guys who know the price of everything and the value of nothing. There's plenty of money to go around in the PGA Tour. As Rory said in Feinstein's column the other day, you know, we're already getting paid too much to play golf. It's just a game. And I think the guys who really want to be the best, the guys who have that competitive drive that distinguishes the best in the world at something, are not going to go. I can't imagine Michael Jordan leaving the NBA for a Saudi-backed basketball league if all they were doing was playing horse.
Look, you and I agree on that, but I think we're going to find that there are going to be more players that go that probably know that they're not going to be among the greats in history, but are contenders to win major championships. But ultimately, the fact that they can increase their take-home by, I don't know, tenfold, that matters more to them. And
let them go.
Right.
A lot of them aren't going to be missed. I mean, how many guys on the LIV Tour genuinely right now is anyone going to miss? DJ, maybe Bryson, because people love to hate him. Koepka.
To the PGA Tour, I would argue not even DJ. I would argue there's only one player on that series that the PGA Tour wishes didn't go, and that's Bryson, because he is a draw. DJ's not a draw. Koepka's not a draw. Bryson DeChambeau was a draw.
And then some of those guys, hey, man, if you can get rid of Patrick Reed, by all means. I mean,
best
the PGA
thing.
Tour would have paid the Saudis to start a league to get rid of Patrick
That's
Reed.
That's the best part about LIV, is that they took Patrick Reed. Who's going to cheat on the PGA Tour now? Luke Dukac, enjoy the rest of your vacation, man. I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
You got it. Luke Dukac here on the Adam Gold Show. All right, it's halftime. We'll get into a lot more things about the draft and the Big Ten ACC Challenge in our roundtable in 45 minutes.
And now your halftime entertainment.
All right, put four on the board.
All right.
Now, in a minute, I'm going to give you my review. Might be some spoilers, but I'm going to let everyone know when I talk about it. My review of Top Gun Maverick. Finally, I actually got to go see it last night.
All right. Let me hear.
Okay, I'll go and get into it now. So some spoilers for people who may not know.
Did you watch it at home, or did you go out to watch it?
No, I went in theater.
So you took the highway to the danger zone.
I did. Yes, I did. Kenny met me there.
Thank you very much.
It was a fun movie. I had a blast. And they tapped into some of the nostalgia stuff perfectly.
Sure.
It's like right in the beginning, you got jets taking off down the runway.
Yeah.
You got Kenny Loggins, Highway Danger Zone.
Oh, we're playing that again?
Right at the beginning. It's like, here we go. We're
Do we
right
have any new
it.
Music in it or no?
Oh, there's definitely some new music in there for sure.
Did Kenny Loggins write another song?
No, but you had to play that.
Of course.
Anyway, so we're right off the beginning, and then you see Tom Cruise, Maverick, grab his bomber jacket out of the locker, and he's taking off on his motorcycle, and jets and stuff are taking off. I was like, best movie of all time. I was in that moment. I was like, this is amazing.
Look, but everything I've heard about it, and look, I'm the guy that thinks that Top Gun is just okay.
Yeah.
I don't hate Top Gun, but it makes people lose their minds.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like Die Hard.
Yeah.
Right? Die Hard was a fun movie.
Yeah.
Right? It ain't great. It was just fun.
Mm-hmm.
But people lose their minds over Die Hard. Maybe, I don't know, Bruce Willis walking barefoot on glass does it for you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Also, Hans Gruber, I mean,
sure.
good character. But everything I have heard about Top Gun Maverick is that it is just a fun movie.
It is
And that's
fun.
Good.
And you know what they did? They advanced the plot from the previous movie.
Oh, did they?
So it's not a remake or anything. No, this is something that they built in.
Okay.
They kind of explained like what's been going on since the last
How
movie ended.
How old does Cruise look in the movie?
I mean, like he's 42.
Time stood still.
It did. Time did stand still. But there was a plot, and they could just get directly to what's going on. In all honesty, this movie, when you look at the plot, because
right.
there's a mission that they have to,
okay,
to achieve.
Good. We like a mission.
There's a combat mission.
Nice.
It's Star Wars.
What is he still like flying combat missions?
He does in this one. Yeah.
When did the first one come out? Like 87?
Something like that. But either way, this movie...
He wouldn't still be flying combat missions in his 50s?
That's the whole point. They kind of get into that. Like, Maverick is still that dude. Anyway, the whole plot, this whole mission,
right?
It's Star Wars, A New Hope.
Oh, really?
It's 100% Star Wars, A New Hope. Like, they literally go into, all right, we got to hit this target. It's only about 3 meters wide. It's a... They don't even say where it is. Like, we just got to hit this target. It's uranium. It's going to be bad for the world if, you know, whatever. Anyway, all right, you got to fly down this trench. You got to hit this exact target at the exact time. Oh, we got to avoid these guns. Oh, and there's other fighters that might be coming in. Oh, we got to fly down a trench at top speed and hit this target. Oh, and by the way, we got to hit this target, and one guy's targeting system goes out.
Oh, nice.
Much like Luke Skywalker hitting the exhaust port without his targeting computer with proton torpedoes. Like, oh, this is A New Hope on Earth.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You say Star Wars A New Hope.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't know, other than Return of the Jedi, which was the second one.
That was the third one?
Third one.
Or episode six.
Episode.
A New Hope's the original.
Okay,
so yes. Basically...
Just say Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars. So
Thank
the
you.
Original where they destroyed the Death Star...
Yeah, Return of the Jedi was the third one.
Yeah. So the original where they destroyed the Death Star...
Right.
Okay, they had to fly down that trench, hit that exact point at the exact right time, and had to get out in time.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
That's this movie.
Good.
That's what this movie is.
That's fun.
And it was awesome.
Good.
I love it.
Again, I like fun.
It was a great time.
I'm all about fun.
And Maverick is still that dude.
Yeah. Was there any reference to Goose's family?
Oh, yeah. Well, his son is actually one of the pilots.
Oh, of course.
So, yeah. His son's call sign is Rooster.
Really?
Yep.
Really, very nice.
Yeah.
Is there a picture of Goose? Do we have a photo of Anthony Edwards?
There are flashbacks.
Right? Oh
yeah, there's,
man, it has to be.
There's the whole thing.
Gosh, that's so
good.
Well,
remember that his son, Goose's son, was in the original movie. He was just a small kid. So, yeah. So it does make sense. So there is good
Very
continuity
nice.
There.
Just drive a motorcycle?
No.
Tom Cruise doesn't drive a motorcycle?
Oh, Cruise drives like seven of them.
Okay, great.
Wonderful. Always on a motorcycle. No helmet.
Of course.
No helmet.
Same aviator sunglasses?
Of course.
Oh, man, that's fantastic.
Of course.
All right.
So there's the spoiler ending for Top Gun for everyone. In terms of also in music, we talked about a little bit. That Music Fest is taking place right now. It actually started about 30 minutes ago.
Yes.
Over in Durham Pools Athletic Park. So a lot of great musicians all celebrating North Carolina music this weekend. Some of the big-time headliners, Steve King and the Rangers were not available,
well,
Adam.
I swear you said Steve King last time.
I mean, that's okay.
That's why I said Steve King. I never heard of Steve King and the Rangers.
Steep Canyon, much like the Steep Canyon that Top Gun had.
Oh, Steep Canyon.
Yes.
I thought you said Steve King.
No. Yeah. Did not say that.
Steep canyon.
Yes, much like the steep canyon that Maverick and all the other pilots had to get out of in their mission in Top Gun Maverick.
And there, you know, there are
pull
people
10 G's.
There are
in
people in their cars screaming, "Gold, it's steep canyon." I really thought you said Steve King and the Rangers.
Sure, that's fine. Okay. Well, Steep Canyon Rangers, the main headliner tonight at Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Their set starts at 9:15. We'll also see American Aquarium, Delta Ray, Jason Adamo Band also performing tonight. Tomorrow, Chatham County Line, Dylan Fence, Mipso, the Mountain Goats, Autumn Brand, and Kenneth Stewart. There's a lot of, again, North Carolina bands all performing at Durham Bulls Athletic Park, which is fun because North Carolina sports-wise, minor league baseball is a very big thing.
Yes.
Durham Bulls are a very popular minor league franchise, obviously based off of Bull Durham. A lot of great North Carolina music, so it's a celebration of all these. So if you get a chance to come out to the Triangle to Durham, you should check these out. Tickets are still available. Just head to thatmusicfest.com, and you can still buy tickets. It's going to be a great time. I will be there this weekend.
That just sells it. What a great time. Dennis will be there.
I will be there.
Live music and refreshments.
Yeah, there are tickets you can buy. You can actually sit in the stands if you want to watch the music. You can actually...
Can I sit on third base?
You actually can sit in the infield. Okay. If you buy a ticket, you can bring like a lawn chair with you or like a camping chair. So you can sit in the infield. You can sit on the first base line, Adam.
Home plate?
That would actually be great.
Home plate?
I actually want to claim home plate.
I would like to sit on
where
home plate.
I want to sit. Okay. All right, final bit of news here. So Rockstar Games has a couple of big major properties that they've put out. Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto. Two of the big ones that they put out. Now, people have been waiting for Grand Theft Auto 6 to arrive. Grand Theft Auto 5, or GTAV as some people like to refer it, it's been out for several years. There's obviously been updates to the game and added features and added storylines to the game that just through regular updates. Now, there have been rumors that Grand Theft Auto 6 might come out in a couple years, but that rumor, it might be dissipating a little bit because there's a theory that Grand Theft Auto 4 might get a remaster and some other games might actually, the previous ones might get a remaster in order to fit current consoles. And that's actually something we might see with Red Dead Redemption. We've seen a Red Dead Redemption 2 come out, but it appears that Red Dead Redemption is going to be coming off a PlayStation streaming service. And that's, again, the theory that they're going to remaster the game to re-release it for people out there because they can make money that way.
So you can
play it on current consoles.
I like that. Have you ever seen the movie Gone in 60 Seconds?
Yeah.
Right?
Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage, Angelina Jolie. What was the name of the car they were trying to steal?
Steep King and Rangers.
Yes. Exactly. Steve King was the name of the car.
Oh.
No, it was not. Eleanor.
Eleanor?
Eleanor was the, what thing was a Mustang?
Okay.
I think it was a Mustang they were trying to steal.
And this comes up because?
Because when you, Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So, okay.
That's where I was. As soon as you said Grand Theft Auto, I don't know why, that's where I went.
All right.
But a fun movie, Gone in 60 Seconds. Who do we got here? Is this Steve King again?
This is Delta Ray.
Delta Ray.
Yep.
She's fantastic. Correction on the car from Gone in 60 Seconds.
Wasn't Eleanor?
Well, no, it was Eleanor. I got that part right. It was not a Mustang.
No.
It was a 1967 Ford Shelby GT500.
Okay. You had the Ford right.
That was the car they saved for last.
Ah.
And actually, that might be a model of a Mustang, for all I know. I'm not really a car guy. But so that was the car, and that was a special car to Nicolas Cage's character, and that's why they saved it for last.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave all of the cars code names, but they saved Eleanor for last. Fun movie, and Angelina Jolie is in it, and I can't think of a downside to that. All right, let's place our bets, Dennis.
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
All right, I went 0-3. You went 0-3.
Yep.
So let's just move on.
Yeah.
Right? Start us off.
Tampa Bay Lightning, Moneyline plus 160 tonight. I'll take it. I think they win the
Lightning on the road
mm-hmm.
staying alive at plus 160.
They will stave off elimination.
Just so you, plus 160 to stave.
Yep.
We don't have to say when, just to stave.
Just to stave.
Very, very nice. I'm going to start with the Champions League qualifier. God. I'm 0 for 1 on these so far. No, I'm sorry. It's not Champions League qualifier. I'm staying away from that. My fault. Women's World Cup qualifying.
Oh, okay.
Ukraine and Scotland. All right. More goals in the first half than in the second half. Scotland is a huge favorite, I believe, in the game.
Okay.
More goals in the first half than the second half at plus 205.
Okay.
All
right. I'm going to go UFC this weekend because I always do. I actually do pretty decent on these UFC.
Do you?
Picks. Yeah.
What's your record? Do you know?
I think it might be 3-2.
That's very good, actually. Yeah.
It's a lightweight matchup. Armin Tsarukyan takes on Mateusz Gamro. My apologies on that. Lightweight matchup. Gosh, I can't even think now. Anyway, give me Armin Tsarukyan to win tomorrow by knockout, TKO, or DQ, plus 225.
Okay.
He's a heavy favorite to win. He's won his last two fights by knockout, so I'm going to take that again. He's on a 5 or 6 fight win streak, Tsarukyan is. He's a heavy favorite. That's why I'm going to take him to win by knockout.
All right, then. I'll take your word for it.
Okay. You're not going to watch?
No.
It's on ESPN
tomorrow.
No,
you'll just tell me what happened.
We're going to be out of sports to watch.
And then that'll be fine.
Okay.
You just tell me what happened. All right, let's go. I'm going to go to hockey now.
Yes.
Give me Mikko Rantanen to score the game's first goal with Colorado winning. Colorado has to win, too. Rantanen scores first. Tampa Bay wins. I get zero at plus 1,300.
Okay. So Rantanen to score
first. Rantanen gets the first goal
and
of the
Avalanche
game.
To win.
Avalanche win plus 1,300.
Okay. I'm going to the Premier Lacrosse League.
Of course you are.
Because why not? I already have a future bet out there with Will Manny going over 4.5 points for the Archers. That's a plus 130. I like how that's feeling right now.
I'm sure you do.
The Cannons take on the Chrome. Asher Nolting, rookie out of High Point University for the Cannons. Over 2.5 is a plus 120. I'll take it. Over 2.5 points for Asher Nolting.
Over for who?
Asher Nolting. He's a rookie out of High Point.
That's not a band playing.
No,
that station's music festival.
Yes, we
see. That sounds like a band playing it. Man, you get wait till you guys hear Asher Nolting. I have their first album.
I'm sure you do on cassette.
What's the cassette? Really?
Why not?
Is that where you had to go?
Why not?
Cassette? I'm surprised you didn't say 8-track.
Nah, cassettes.
All right, fine. I had it on DAT, actually. It wasn't cassette. All right, my third and final wager. And I'm doing this. I'm doing another hockey prop.
Another one?
Yes. Maybe I'm just hoping that one of these hit. Valerie Nichushkin. Score the first goal, and the Avs win at plus 2,200. Hmm. So if Nichushkin or Rantanen scores the first goal and the Avalanche win, I'm cashing in at the window. Not to mention Ukraine-Scotland with more goals.
Okay,
in the
so you know what? One of these bets is not going to hit. But the fact that one of them does is a good thing.
Gosh, I'll take the 1,300.
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth. I am at 3165 to the good.
Yeah, we got units to spare.
Right, my gosh, we can light units on fire. We could be like the Live Investment Fund. Yeah. We could just light money on fire. It doesn't matter. Plus, it's not real money, which is sort of the same thing as is going on there.
That's fair.
Look, we're going to talk about this more later, and I'm not going to get into anything deep about it. You know what really has kind of puzzled me? Hmm. How many people are just so... And it's not a huge number, but there are people that are, like, outwardly pro-destruction of the PGA Tour. Like, if you're a golf fan, look, if you're not a golf fan, whatever. I don't care. But none of this is good for the sport. It's just not good for the sport.
Yeah.
Unless you have a financial stake in Brooks Koepka and his finances, none of it is good for the sport. It's bad for the sport. So I just don't understand the thought process behind being so pro Live Series. I just don't.
This is the Adam Gold Show.